Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell.
Back to throw, first and 10, the pass completes his tight end.
And Raja Bell.
Bell has got capturing it. 22 to Raja.
Saw the future of football right before your eyes. Just yell it out, man. He can't guard me.
What is going on? Welcome to Off the Bench with Danny Cannell and Raja Bell. It is Friday.
The struggle is real, brother.
Yeah, here we go. Hey, the NFL draft was lit.
Yeah, yeah. How many hours of sleep did you get last night?
Just a few. A few hours. It was more of a nap than anything.
I'm so sorry.
No, it's all good. It's all good. I got some coffee in me. We got the weekend ahead of us, but I do have draft coverage tonight, yes, too, right here on CBS Sports HQ, which you can check out. Make sure you do. We got a very special guest, Raja's boy, Steve Nash, is coming on. So I can't wait to get some stories, not about Steve Nash's career. I want to get some stories, some dirt on Raja.
Yeah, we want some dirt.
When he gets out there, Steve, lock it up. We did have an NBA game last night. We'll break that down a little bit later. But it really was. And we're going to do our five-star Q&A. It's one of my favorite segments of the week. We're going to get to that later in the show, too. But it's all about the NFL draft. It was. We talked about being crazy. I thought there were some crazy developments in the last 48 hours leading up to it. Mm-hmm. You had it was all Sam Darnold or Josh Allen. Sam Darnold or Josh Allen leading into the draft. And then all of a sudden it's like, whoa, Baker Mayfield, number one, could go number one. He's the guy I thought was going to be the best quarterback in this draft. I did not think the Browns would have the guts to pull the trigger on him. They do. I actually really like it for Baker Mayfield. I think he's in a good spot. I think he's got one of the best supporting casts around him when you look at talent of these quarterbacks and where they're going. And I think he's got that kind of dynamic, the confidence and the arrogance to go into Cleveland with a chip on his shoulder, everything he's been through, and go in there and produce.
But do you think it's a risky move coming off of Johnny Football?
100% risky move.
Yeah, it's a risky move. And everybody was talking about who's swing. Like Josh Allen was the swing for the fences. I think Baker Mayfield was the swing for the fences pick. Yeah. I really do. Because he could be. It is going to be an all or nothing.
Yes, it is going to be.
He's going to be out of the league or he's going to be the superstar.
I actually applaud them. I like Baker Mayfield, too. I applaud them for having their guy and having the, you know. It's not that easy sometimes sitting in a draft room wondering whether, like, you take the guy that you really like or you go with the guy that everybody, you know, the safe pick. And Baker, they've gotten that position wrong so many times that there had to be, like, an extra, like, added level of pressure for them in the room to take the right guy and to have the intestinal fortitude, the guts to say, hey, this is our guy, despite the 6'1", despite the, you know, crotch grabbing, running from police and this and that. Like, we're going with our guy because we believe in him. And so I give them a lot of credit for that. But make no mistake, it's a risky pick. It is, you know, like if you missed on Sam Darnold at number one, in 5 years, you could sit back 6-7 years. You could say, hey, everyone had him at number one. Like, no, he was the consensus number one. You're not going to be able to do that with Baker Mayfield if he's not what you think he's going to project to be.
It's one of those ones that could cost you your job later, especially if you look at the other quarterbacks. But I really feel like he's got the best skill set and he's in a really good situation. Now, their fourth pick is, I didn't love it. Denzel Ward, they took the defensive back from Ohio State with Bradley Chubb on the board.
That's
the problem I had it with it. And that's why I think, and that kind of threw the draft off a little bit towards the top. I think the Broncos were willing to trade out of that pick. John Elway had said as much coming into the draft. And then when they saw this player, who I thought could have been the number one player, like in any other draft, if there's not a team with quarterback needs at one and, you know, other positions, they would have, Bradley Chubb could have gone one. And the fact that he was sitting there at five, like, totally changed the Broncos' plans. They're like, oh my gosh, we can get this player to play on the other side of Von Miller. Much like I thought the Browns could have done, putting him on the other side of Myles Garrett. I think, you know, that was the surprise early to me.
Well, I agree with you 100%. And, I think if I'm in that Browns front office, I may take a swing at number one. Let's say my quarterback. I will like one of them more than the other, right? Regardless of whether in 7 years, you know, I'm going to be left saying I didn't take the pick that everyone would have taken. I'm not doing that on one and four.
Right.
And at four, if you got the best player, quite possibly player on the board, positionless football player, you don't go out and take another swing at somebody. You take him. You take the guy that bona fide, by all accounts, best player on the board, especially defensively. You don't take another swing. That's where I agree. I think they missed on that.
And I think there's more of a chance that they're going to look bad on the Denzel Ward pick than the Baker Mayfield pick, in my mind. That's what I – and in large part because I think he could go playing with Von Miller. He could have a ton of production, and Browns fans are looking there and they're like, man, we could have that guy.
So Denzel Ward,
he's 5'10", he's a little bit smaller size, lights it up, 40.
He may be good,
yeah.
But that doesn't, I mean, like Chubb could be phenomenal.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, so you could still get great production out of Denzel Ward and be sitting there saying, hey, look, no, we made a great pick. Like, he's played great for us. And that guy could be a potential like Pro Bowler for the next 6 years. Like, you take the guy who is the best player.
Exactly. That was the shocker to me. So number two, the Giants, a lot of, speculation. Would they take a quarterback? Would they trade out? I thought they should have traded out. Instead, I feel like they went the safe route.
I love this one.
And went ahead and got Saquon Barkley. I'd like this one too. Nick Costos, I was doing the coverage last night. He's a Giants diehard fan. He was all upset about it. He's like, no, he thought they should take a quarterback and go for the future. I think they're going much like the Patriots are doing. They're saying, you know what? These quarterbacks aren't as great as everybody's making them out to be.
Right.
Let's get somebody in here right now who can help Eli Manning, who can make our offense more dynamic, a playmaker. So I thought it was a pretty smart pick.
I like the pick. He might be the best offensive player in the draft. Here's what tripped me out about this year's, and I know that it's rare that you get a quarterback class like this, but people are acting as if they're not making quarterbacks anymore after this draft.
Right.
Like, this is going to be the last year that you can ever get a damn quarterback.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that's silly. So,
at this time last year, nobody was projecting Baker Mayfield to be the number one overall pick.
Dude,
he came out of nowhere. Next year's class does look bad, but somebody will jump. Someone will rise.
It happens every year. And then the following year, and when you've got a guy Eli's in a weird place because he's older, but I don't think he's done.
Right.
I mean, and so weapons, right? Get him, and especially a running back where you could take some of the weight off of Eli's shoulders. Like, he's got a propensity to throw the ball away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's what Eli's going to do.
Yep.
Like, he's more of a gunslinging mentality. Take some of the pressure and opportunity for him to throw the ball away. By getting him getting him a bell cow, someone who can run the ball, someone who can catch. You know, he's a great pass catching back out of the backfield, little dump downs, let him get wide open. Like, I think that's a perfect weapon for the Giants, and it's specifically Eli at where he's at in his career.
You know who I'm scared for? Sam Darnold.
Yeah.
So I thought all these quarterbacks, and it was kind of like, all right, who do you think is going to be good? Who's going to project to have the most successful career? And I thought all of them, it depends on where they go. I think Sam Darnold probably is in the worst situation out of all these quarterbacks. He's going to a bad team who's been struggling. Their roster is not that good. They don't have a quarterback in place that can kind of hold you over. He's going to get forced into playing time early,
in my opinion,
in New York.
Yeah.
With a coach who's a lame duck, most likely, if they struggle, in Todd Bowles. It's just all – and there's these incredibly high expectations – and I have questions about his arm strength. It's just, for me, it looks like this could be the roughest situation for these young quarterbacks.
Well, look.
I hate the Jets.
That's the curse of being that good in any sport. Like, you're typically going to bad teams. Like, so with bad teams comes dysfunction. It's why they're bad teams. And so you just hope, I think if you're a Jets fan, you hope that over the next couple years, Who's there now?
They got Josh McCown.
Josh McCown.
And they have Teddy Bridgewater. Now your hope, Josh McCown's getting old. He can play some. Now that's your hope. For me, and he's a great mentor.
You hope that him and Teddy B can split the year.
Yeah.
Like, Teddy B and McCown can split the year.
Yep.
I think by everyone's account, Sam Darnold was a guy who had the highest upside maybe, but still needed some polish. So you certainly don't want to drop him in right away. So maybe he gets to escape some of that dysfunction in terms of Todd Bowles being a lame duck coach and all of that. And all that falls to McCown and Teddy Bridgewater. And then he can develop for a year, maybe even two.
Mm-hmm.
And then you've got your franchise guy going forward. I mean, that would have to be the hope for the Jets fan.
Yeah, exactly. So, but here's where we are. In 2018, no quarterback has that luxury, especially when a fan base is going to be all over them saying, we need to see what he's got. We need to see what he's got. And if you're bad, which I think you do, I know you don't.
Yeah.
But coach, and especially if you have a coach who's kind of his job's on the line, which is very much where Todd Bowles is, you look for an excuse. You look for a hope, reason to give you hope for the future.
There's so much pressure for these guys.
And I wonder, and they don't have much talent on their roster. Well, that's the other thing. They don't have many weapons to work with.
From a front office perspective, if you know Todd Bowles isn't your guy, and there's not much he's going to be able to do this year with what they got to change that opinion, I'm having the conversation with you. Like, listen, you're not throwing him out to the wolves. Like, I don't care what this gets like. Like, you're going to come have this conversation with us, and we will revisit this, every three four games. We'll revisit whether he's ready. You'll give us an update. Like, well, but this is not going to be you throwing him out there for some kind of splash to see if you can save your job. We're not turning that into this.
All right. Let's get to Hannah's team.
Oh, here we go. This is just what I was going to bring up.
Let's go to the Bills.
Okay.
They trade up to get their guy in Josh Allen.
So I love this. I do love this. But my question is, did the Bills make a mistake by taking Allen over Rosen? Now, did you guys hear what Rosen had to say post? Like,
yeah. Let's hit one at a time because I do have some strong feelings on Rosen.
All right.
I also have some strong feelings on Josh Allen.
I think I have to hear your opinion.
So Josh Allen is the guy everybody fell in love with.
Right.
Because he's big. He's got the super arm. He's pretty athletic. But I kept looking at some very serious flaws on the field, which I think should be a problem. Right. Like, that to me was concerning.
I feel like he needs like a year or two.
Absolutely he does. Here's my other concern. AJ McCarron, who the Bills just signed. He thinks he's a starter. He is not going to take Josh Allen and welcome him in and be like,
mentor.
Hey, Rook, let me help you out.
No internship. Especially going on after some tweets Allen had about McCarron's wife.
What? Whoa! Josh Allen's tweets.
About Catherine Webb?
Yeah,
his tweets are awful to begin with.
Well, yeah.
Why is he tweeting about
some
Catherine
racial,
Webb?
Did he have some racial stuff in his tweets, too?
Yes. People were talking about how shady. They don't think Shady's going to like him, though.
No, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how he does in the locker room. What do you say about Catherine Webb? I mean, is it talking about how good looking she is or how she's overrated? Oh!
Yeah,
but I think that's meant more affectionately. And then it says McCarron's girl, though. This is January 7th, 2013. I think that was the national championship that McCarron was in.
Exactly. Everybody was saying it. Brent Musburger was saying it. Let me ask you about the tweets, Raja, because I think it's ridiculous the amount of energy, conversation we put into something somebody tweets out when they're 14 years old.
Right.
Like it's you're young, you're dumb.
I've
but he did
so
use the
times.
N-word.
Yeah.
He did. He had a phrase in there that said, if it ain't white, it ain't right.
Oh,
but again, his explanation for it was on Modern Family, and it was some kind of episode they did, and the guy Phil Dunphy said it.
Who is fantastic.
Kind of as a joke. Right. My question is for you, the African American in the room. Does it bother you at all?
I typically with 14-year-olds, like, I don't really remember, but I was stupid at 14, so I'll give a 14-year-old a little bit of a pass just because he's a baby and really I didn't see the tweets. But look, anytime you're in a climate now where like the racial insensitivities either way, white to black to white, like, you know, Spanish to white, it doesn't matter. Like, you've got to be smarter than that. And so I'm just going to use one of your old things about being the CEO of a company.
Yep.
If you're the CEO of a company, like that's bad decision making. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
Like, because in today's day and age, like, you just have to be more socially conscious. But he was 14, so I'm going to give it a pass.
Great.
It's like, to me, it falls in the CEO category, like decision making, not necessarily whether he's racist or not, but kind of like you ask if Baker Mayfield running from the cops, or you ask if, like, are those the guys you want representing your thing? And the decision making is kind of like the biggest piece of that. But I don't think he's
racist.
And
the cleanest out of all of them is Sam Darnold, which is why I think a lot of people said he was the safe pick. Like, he's the guy
he
who
did
hasn't
all
had
his interviews with his mother, which was adorable.
Right, exactly. That's what you want.
But
absolutely.
I do see those tweets and everything. That's a problem with our generation in entirety. I mean, if you're going to be ignorant when you're 14, just delete it.
Yeah,
when
get
you're
rid
15.
Of it.
Why? Yeah, just like.
All right. I think in 48 hours, everybody's going to forget. Which is kind of what we do. And we get all outraged and then we forget.
If he just plays well. Come on,
right,
Bill's
exactly.
not yet.
All right. So that leaves the next quarterback up, who was the fourth one taken, and it was Josh Rosen. Here's the thing on
Those
Josh Rosen.
Dolphins fans.
I know, right?
Would the
really
Dolphins have taken
him?
My boys and I, we're not even Dolphins fans, and we were like, the Dolphins are going to mess around and get Josh Rosen.
Yeah.
We were fired up.
Yeah,
I know.
Same. I was like, but I was really hoping they didn't get him.
Yeah,
I kind of wanted.
Oh, your Bills.
No way do I want.
Where were you at with that? Like, did you see that coming?
To the Cardinals. Yeah,
I saw them moving up and getting him.
Yeah, because there was a lot of they're in a spot where they've got Sam Bradford. They need a long term answer. There was a lot of conversation leading into the draft for them. So here's the thing: I don't love the way Josh Rosen carries himself.
Okay.
Right, but when you go again, and I try to put aside all feelings and go to the film, he does make a lot of throws. He's looks NFL ready. Throws with good anticipation. He's accurate. He's got, I basically think he's going to be the next Jay Cutler. And I think you got a glimpse of that after the draft last night when he comes out firing, guns a-blazing, and is all, hey, there were nine mistakes made ahead of me.
That was
crazy. I'm ticked off. And so basically, I get it. You basically threw all those nine other dudes under the bus, and you insulted the other quarterbacks. Which, hey, this is who Josh Rosen is.
Yeah.
And he kind of was like, he said, hey, maybe if I would have just kept my mouth shut the last 3 years, I would have been taken first. And like, these types of comments are what you're getting. And if you're good and you're great, you can say it. But if you're not, they're going to come back to haunt you.
You got
to
go out there and walk the walk. Like, you know, it's the time for talk is over, babe. Like, you have to now go out there and produce. And I would make the argument that there's not a whole lot of personality characteristic that separates Baker Mayfield from Josh Rosen. They're the same guy. Mm-hmm. Josh Rosen just opens his mouth.
Right.
But they carry themselves the same way. Like, it would have been interesting to see if Baker Mayfield had slipped to 10.
Right.
And they interviewed him. Like, what would he have said? Because he's got, I mean, the chips on his shoulders, because they're plural.
Yeah.
Like, they're way bigger than the ones that are on Josh Rosen's shoulders. And they've had to be. Because
now he doesn't get that anymore, though. Because he was the one overall. You can't say you had a chip on your shoulder anymore. You were the first guy taken. So that one, that's kind of gone now.
Yeah, but I hope that he never loses that. Because that's what makes him special, in my opinion, and is he plays like that. But I guess what I'm saying is, like, that personality characteristic, it's really weird because it's happened to me like my whole career. While celebrated in one person could be a deterrent from taking another person, right? Like, we have the same personality characteristic. And in Debo, like, it's fantastic. He's fiery. We love it. He's a competitor. And if I do it, I'm like arrogant and I'm brash. And it's, you know what I mean? Like, it's weird how that gets, you know, one gets labeled as such and the other gets labeled as the other. I don't know what
a lot of it has to do with how, and this is the only thing that should matter. How do your teammates respond to that attitude?
Right.
And Baker Mayfield, guys followed him like he was the Pied Piper.
Yeah.
At UCLA, you can't really say the same about his team.
I guess
he didn't
speaks
really
to
raise
it.
The level of guys. And that's what Jay Cutler. Jay Cutler was an incredibly talented player.
Yeah.
And yet players never really
individually
were infused with
excitement.
You make me
feel better about the Bills pick when you compare Rosen to Jay Cutler. Because I'm like, I don't want that.
But I think Rosen is in a really good situation. So I would put Baker and Josh Rosen as the guys with the best chance to succeed because of the situations they're
like
in.
Like coming into this season.
Yes. Because now I know where they are. If he just stays out of his own way. Like, that's my concern for Josh Rosen. And he already kind of stepped in it already because people are not responding well to his comments.
So do you think the Bills should have taken Rosen?
You talk about a rough quarterback room. Him and A.J. McCarron might have brawled. Like, they might have just thrown down at some point in there. So.
Every time I think of A.J. McCarron, I just think of his damn tattoo. That ugly
thing. My gosh. Yeah, that was the most surprising thing out there.
It's just like,
you call it like vomit on a chest? Did you say that?
Yeah.
It's aggressive. It's aggressive, to say the least. There was some other interesting thing. I thought Derwin James dropping all the way to 17
for
the Chargers. That the Chargers got the steal of the draft. And it's not because I'm biased. I promise.
I expected him to be salty. He was not.
Right.
Like, he was just happy as heck to be.
I don't think you should ever be salty.
No, me neither. But I thought he would be because his stock was higher than 17. But I love the fact that he was just like super geeked.
Put on a happy face.
Yeah, bro.
And you're going to be there for like, 3 minutes? Just be nice in your interview. And then you can sulk later to like your mom or your friends.
Yeah.
Right. There was a head scratcher for me with the Seattle Seahawks taking running back, not Donald Rashad Pumphrey,
Penny.
Rashad Penny, but not Donald
San Diego
Pumphrey
State.
Yeah, I just felt like at that position, running back, and if it's a transcendent player like Saquon Barkley, then go ahead and take him. But if it's a guy, and he's good, he's a good player.
Yeah,
but you could have probably gotten him in the second round. Like, he wasn't on a lot of people's board, and if you missed out on him, you could have gotten Darius. There's like
a lot of really good value
at that position. Speaking of Sony Michel, I thought the Patriots had an outstanding draft. Getting Isaiah Wynn, shore up the offensive line, tackle from Georgia, and getting Sony Michel. Like, Tom Brady's going to have a field day with better protection.
I thought they were going to take Mason Rudolph.
They still could. Yeah. So they have the second pick in the second round here coming up, I believe. It's the Browns have two of the first.
I hope they don't.
I do. I think, here's my philosophy on some of these teams. I think if you're Bill Belichick, are you planning for the long haul? After the way you've been treated?
No.
Like, you had your plan for the long haul and Jimmy Garoppolo,
and they made you trade him away. Yeah,
so I'd be
out.
You know what? I'm going all in. I'm going to get one more Super Bowl, and I'm going to bounce.
Into the sunset.
So you do everything you can now to do that. So that's why I don't see them taking a quarterback.
Patriots have 43 overall.
43 overall.
11th pick today.
Who has the second pick?
The Giants.
The Giants. So there's a lot of speculation. And speaking of that philosophy, I might do that if I'm the Giants, too.
Yeah.
You've only got a couple years. You got a new coaching staff. Why not put them in the best position to succeed now, then worry about your franchise quarterback down the road when you've got a quarterback with two Super Bowls who still has a couple good years left in him. So it's a crazy night.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think if there's anything else.
Baltimore moving back up in 32,
goodness,
bro.
My favorite pick
of
the night.
Yeah.
All right, all these quarterbacks.
Well, I love the tight end pick. The kid from
South Carolina.
Yeah, no, he's nasty. What do they call him, like the redhead four or something like that?
Yes. Outstanding pick if Joe Flacco is the quarterback, because we were evaluating before they took Lamar Jackson. I'm sitting there thinking, Joe Flacco is a quarterback who needs a tight end.
Like, right.
I just think it's a position he needs. They got a great player there who can come in and get some production. He didn't see the most production at South Carolina because he didn't have a good quarterback, which is what happened with a lot of the players, you know, receivers in this draft. But at tight end, it's a position you can get some mismatches on. But when I saw them trading up into the first round, I was really pumped for a couple reasons. One, Lamar Jackson, I think, was completely overlooked in this quarterback draft evaluation. He should have been grouped in those top four guys.
Yeah.
And why he wasn't, I don't know. I thought that was kind of shit.
Like, yeah. I'm going to be honest. Like, I thought it was kind of shit in, like, the coverage of it.
Yep.
And it was only those four dudes.
Yep.
And, like, I mean, like, I look, they're clearly five of them, whether the four are more highly regarded or not.
Right.
Like, I thought it was kind of poopy.
Absolutely.
I did. Like, you're only going to talk about four of them. I thought, like, that's kind of poopy.
And Lamar Jackson had every bit of much success on the field.
He was a Heisman.
Absolutely. And he played in a pro-style system with Bobby Petrino, put a lot on his shoulders. Is he a project? Yes, but no more than Josh Allen. No more than any of these quarterbacks, really. Every quarterback is a project.
Yeah.
Like it or not. So here's why I think Lamar Jackson dropped. It's because he's not the best communicator.
Right.
I'm not saying it's right. I think it's wrong. And I think the Ravens, I hope they prove everybody wrong, because it's a young kid who grew up in a rough neighborhood, you know, wasn't given some of the benefits that some of these other guys got.
Yeah.
Josh Rosen, you know, his great-great-grandfather started Wharton
School of Business.
And not everybody comes from those backgrounds.
No, I really hope he kills it.
Me too. And I think he can, especially because of the situation he's going to. They do have the luxury, if they want
to
let him chill.
Yep.
But I also, what I hope they do, and I think they'd be crazy not to, is to use him situationally. Get him in there, have some plays designed for him, because you need some offense and you're not getting it from Joe Flacco. Start sprinkling him in there. Start getting some things. They're a pretty good team.
Yeah.
And then you can kind of ease him into it. Get him a feel of what it's like to play. And then once people see what he can do, then they're going to want to see him out there even more.
Marty Mornhinweg in Baltimore, right?
North Turner. They just hired him. Yeah.
Oh, my bad. Who? All right. Well,
he's a pretty good innovative offensive mind who can get creative, and he's got a pretty good history of working with quarterbacks. I think
dual threat type quarterbacks.
No, but I think he's smart enough to realize what you're working with. That's the new NFL.
Because I think that's critical. Like, when you're dealing with a Lamar Jackson, and maybe anybody worth their salt now and like play calling in the NFL can do this, but you have to have someone in there who can deal with the square peg round hole situation, right? Like, you're not going to force him into a situation where he's got to stand in a pocket, like go through his progressions and have to just, you know, beat people with his mind right away. Like, even in 2 years, that's still not going to be his strength. His strength represents other, you know, things. So you have to find someone who can creatively use that. I agree with you, though. Like, I honestly waited all night to try to see what happened with the first round.
Yeah.
And there were multiple times when people moved around in the draft. I was like, uh-oh, they're gonna go get him. Like, they're going to take a shot at it. Now, after Rosen and those guys went off the board, right?
Yep.
And it never happened. And I fell asleep on the 30th pick in the damn draft. I fell asleep. Yep. So I woke up this morning and I looked and I saw him there. And I thought it was great that Ozzie did that, because I think, like, I heard some people saying that Joe Flacco should be pissed, like, You're bringing in my successor. Like, I've won a Super Bowl and you're not getting me weapons. Well, they did. He went out and he addressed the need at tight end and he got you a dope weapon. That kid from South Carolina is a gangster.
Yeah.
But then, you know, he went out and I think Lamar Jackson can be a good pro quarterback.
Absolutely.
And I think he can be an electrifying,
absolutely,
put in the right situation. And I just didn't love the way it went down. And like, I get that sometimes this is uncomfortable along racial lines and so on and so forth, but I've said to you before, like, someone's ability to do something shouldn't be judged on their polish, because people have different opportunities to be polished. Where Josh Rosen you know, has every opportunity in the world to potentially be polished. And like maybe even me, for example, like both of my parents were educators. Like they were heavy. Like we might not have had a lot of money, but they were into education. They were into me being in good schooling situations. Like they made sure I was there. I had an opportunity to be polished. It doesn't mean that like I'm mentally or physically more able to perform at the quarterback position. It just doesn't. They got to be taught. You have to have someone willing to give them a chance.
Right.
You have to be willing to teach them. And then you have to be willing to some degree to play to their strengths like you would with any other quarterback. Like Baker Mayfield is going to be played to his strengths. So is Josh Rosen. So is the kid at Josh Allen.
Yep.
Why not Lamar Jackson? Why does it have to be, well, he can't perform under center? Play to his strengths.
Well, how is his attitude after that? Because I didn't say after that
great.
One either.
He's a great kid. I've talked to him a lot. He's a great kid. He's not a great communicator. When I say communicator, like he struggles, he doesn't sound like a white guy. Like, and I'm not like, or a white quarterback or a franchise quarterback, but
that probably sounds better than Rosen's attitude.
Absolutely. I totally agree. Teams get fooled by the polish all the
time.
They got Johnny Manziel knew how to play the game. Yes, sir.
Of course.
I'm going to work hard. I'm going to do all this. EJ Manuel was one of the most impressive guys. He still is. He's a great guy.
You know,
he got drafted 16th overall because he presented himself like a CEO. You can fool teams all the time, but you're going to miss out on a guy because you were too obsessed with, hey, does he look a certain
way?
Does he talk a certain way? Mm-hmm. And that's what I think happened with the Ravens. The Ravens were the only smart team that said, we got a value play here in a quarterback
to move
who's
back
just
in
as
at 32.
Good as all these other guys.
Two things. The wide receiver from Alabama, Fort Lauderdale, salty.
Yeah.
Now, he was salty. Like, I felt bad. But when I was in Cleveland with the Cavs, and we'd sit around doing this personnel stuff, we'd do all this talking about a guy, and sometimes it had to do with polish. Sometimes it had to do with, like, you know, attitude. I was like, look, dude, I don't care. Like, if I were running, give me gamers. I don't care whether he speaks like this or he can't, like, conjugate a verb. I don't give a stuff. Give me a dude who can go out there and rip, like, can shoot the ball, can defend, who's dirty, will throw an elbow. And the football equivalent of that is just give me a player, quarterback, whatever. Give me somebody who gets it done, who can play. When you put on the tape, you say, hey, he's a mofo, right? I don't care. Like, I don't care if grammatically he's going to be great at a press conference. I just don't.
Yeah.
But that's me.
Because it doesn't matter.
It doesn't matter at the end of the day. Correct.
Basketball court.
Wait, I have one thing to say. The best sport award for the night, I feel like, was Vita Vea.
Yeah.
Yeah. That poor guy. Like, the amount of times he had to say his name correctly and fully. Like, that joke was all night.
Yeah.
Any clip I saw from him was him just laughing and him being like, oh, you got it kind of close. Like, oh my gosh. I was like, that poor guy.
Can I ask you one more question?
Yeah.
Lamar Jackson had to know that he had to have a guarantee, right?
No.
Like showed up at that? He showed up there to sit in that.
There was speculation. Did you see his comment about he didn't have another suit? So he was glad because
really?
He would have been looking scrambling for another suit if he would have had to hang around till day two. So, I mean, imagine that being in that.
Yeah.
Mode,
if I were him, there would be no way I was showing up at that draft.
Yeah, but
there would be no way.
It's all about how your family wants to do it, too.
Yeah.
You know?
I hear you. I was left wondering that because I'm like.
Doesn't have his Heisman suit with him.
Is that the red one?
He traveled with it. Yeah.
I really hope he does well. Like, especially after talking about him right now, I'm like, gosh, especially like I want him to do better than Rosen.
Yeah, Point Beach too, South Florida.
Yeah.
All right, let's keep it rolling. Let's get what do you got for us, Hannah?
Here's what's happening with Hannah.
All right, we won't have to hear speculation about Martavis Bryant wanting to be traded from Pittsburgh anymore. That's because he was traded from Pittsburgh last night. The sometimes talented and sometimes troubled wide receiver was dealt to the Raiders for a third-round pick, which will be the 79th overall.
I thought the Raiders way over-traded for this one, given a third-round pick. He's been wanting to get out of there, and I'm really curious to see how the experiment plays out with John Gruden, old-school guy. If he faces any adversity, if he doesn't live up to expectations, he's been a player who's been outspoken. I don't know how that plays out, but he is incredibly talented.
Over to the NBA, game one of the Warriors, Pelicans, and the Western Conference semis set for Saturday, and Steph Curry is listed as questionable. Yesterday, Curry participated in his first full practice since suffering an MCL sprain on March 23rd. The two-time champ and two-time MVP has missed the last 14 games.
He better come back ready to go.
Are we sweating yet?
The Pelicans, those Pelicans, they're for real.
You can remove the interim tag next to J.B. Bickerstaff's name. He's officially the Memphis Grizzlies head coach. Bickerstaff took over for David Fizdale last season and won 15-48, but lacked a competitive roster and his best player, Mike Conley. This is the first full-time head gig for the 39-year-old Bickerstaff after previously serving in the interim role with the Rockets.
I like J.B. I got to know Bernie well. He was a scout for the Cavs when I was there. He's a great coach in the NBA. I think it's a good move, man. He's relatable to the players. He comes from a basketball family, did not have a good enough roster to really be judged off of last year's win total, so I think it's a good look.
Why don't we talk about hockey more, guys? This is a headline today. NHL demands Bruins star Brad Marchand stop licking players. In Boston's first-round series, Marchand appeared to lick the face of Maple Leafs forward Leo Komarov. The league says that type of affection is not cool.
Well, hockey dudes are just, they're a different
breed. I thought
this
headline was fake. I thought it was fake news when I kind of came across social media. I was like, what?
They're different
news,
man.
That's weird.
That's how they get you with those clicks.
Yeah, exactly.
But did we click it? All right, the puck dropped on the second round last night. Danny's Penguins scored three unanswered in the third period to top the Capitals 3-2, while Raj's Knights blasted the Sharks 7-0.
Yeah.
We setting up for a rivalry in the Cup, guys?
Oh, you already know it.
Can't wait to watch that one. The Bucks force a game 7. Who pulls this one out? Is this a home team? Celtics pull it out? Or do you think the Bucks actually are able to go to Boston and switch, flip the series and win it?
It's an if situation. It's a if Milwaukee can have Thon Maker, Malcolm Brogdon, and Matthew Dellavedova travel. Because they have not traveled. I don't even know if they've actually got on the plane to go to Boston. But if they show up in Boston, it makes that team just dangerous enough and well-rounded enough to beat Boston. It doesn't really matter what Boston does. They have too many weapons. They're the more well-rounded, more versatile team with the most depth. If they don't and they get nothing out of their role players and it's solely going to be Giannis, Chris Middleton, and a little bit of Bledsoe, then yeah, Boston's going to win it because it's going to be a grind you out, possession by possession, low scoring affair. Giannis has to be great. Middleton has to be really good, and then they got to get supporting cast.
All right, so we got a game 7 with the Bucks Celtics. We have a game 6, the Cavs Pacers tonight. Is this where the Cavs close it out on the road, or do you think they go to game 7, bring it back to Cleveland?
I said they close it.
You think they close it?
Yes.
I want to say they close it, but I honestly think it's going to go a game 7.
I hope so.
Yeah.
It's been a
fascinating. You want to do it a game 7?
Well, yeah, it's been really entertaining. It's been back and forth. Yeah. Although I thought Indiana was going to pull it out, and if the 4-minute when they caved in the last 4 minutes, the game they had the lead in game 5.
Yeah.
Was it game 4 when they blew the lead with 4 minutes left and they kind of came out? If this LeBron James dagger, like that to me is the one that just kind of sucks the wind out of all of Indiana's momentum that they
had. I think
he's
going to want some rest.
I think they feel like they got slighted with the goaltending call. And if it's going to be interesting because LeBron is better on those 2 days rest.
Yeah.
That 1 day rest. The question is, do you wear him out tonight? If you wear him out tonight chasing it and you don't win, you're kind of screwed in game 7. So do you kind of put him on a minute restriction or an ideal minute total tonight knowing that you're going to need him in game 7 potentially? It's an interesting situation there.
Game 7 would be Sunday.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. What about OKC and Utah Jazz? Because that series looked like it was a wrap. They were up 25. That's one of those moments where you're like, uh-oh, that'd have flipped the whole series.
I think it could have. I don't know that – 3-1 holes don't usually get climbed out of for a reason. Mm-hmm. But I could see this being a really interesting game and the Thunder figuring out how to win it. My heart says that Utah is going to win the series, but the Thunder could win again tonight.
I want the Thunder in this one.
Yeah, I do too. What about Raptors-Wizards? Quick, who's winning?
Raptors going to win this.
Boom, there you go. Pick it out. All right, let's get on to Steve Nash. Talk a little hoops and a little soccer and a little Rajah Bell.
All right, everybody, let's welcome to the pod one of my favorite teammates of all time, soon-to-be Basketball Hall of Famer, Stephen John Nash. Welcome, brother.
Thanks for the formality there, the middle name, full first name, rare. I like it.
Anyway, bro, it's been a while. We've texted a little bit, but congrats on all the success, the family, the soccer broadcast, everything. But first and foremost, how does it feel to be a Hall of Famer, man? Talk to me.
I mean, you know, it's like one of those things. I don't even think you'd ever dream of that as a kid. You know, you dream of playing in college or playing in the pros or being an all-star or something. But, that's it's beyond the dreams you have as a kid and to actually kind of to be there makes me feel like realize how much life has passed, one.
Right.
Which isn't like, I don't know if that's like the, you know, the best outcome of it, but it's like, wow, a lot of stuff's happened. Here I am.
Right.
And, but the positive is that, you know, like I've said this a few times, but you know, that someone told me when I was in high school, you know, there's going to come a day where they don't ask you back, where they say like, you're not good enough to play anymore in high school, college, pros, whatever it is. And this is kind of like the last stop. Like I kind of made it all the way to the end of the train, so to speak, as basketball players go. And to be recognized in that way, to get into that group is I don't know. It's like the weirdest thing, because people have been telling me that it's going to happen for a few years. And at the same time, it's unfathomable. So it's just one of those weird things that I'm still trying to wrap my head around. At the same time, I don't really spend much time thinking about it, but I'm very honored.
Yep. There is something you have to think about, though. It'll be your speech. Like, are you excited about getting up there and kind of talking about your career and, you know, talking about some of the people that influence you? Do you get nervous about giving a speech like that with that much importance?
This
like,
guy loves how to hear you approach himself talk.
Oh, he does.
He's fine. He's fine.
I mean, I have been known to go over how much stuff is. I think when the Suns retired my jersey, they got a call from the league the next day saying, like, you got to keep these half times. So, like, you know, under 25 minutes or whatever it was. But to be honest with you, the speech gives me anxiety. Like, I was like, oh, man, do I have to go in the Hall of Fame? Just because I was nervous about making a speech in front of, like, all those Hall of Famers. And I don't know, like, Roger, do you feel, I don't know, when you're around, like, if you ever see, like, Kareem Abdul-Jabbar or Oscar Robertson or something, like, in your career, was it always kind of like, I don't know, I always feel, like, nervous around them.
Yeah, complete reverence. Like, no, real, seriously.
You're just like, you know, so even though it's like, you know, they probably don't even pay too much mind to it, you're still always kind of like, God, I got to speak in front of these guys. I'm going to make myself look like a complete ass. Right. It's once in a lifetime chance to, like, you know, it's not like I'm going to get a redo. So I got to admit, I was a little anxious about that, but I'm sure I'll have a couple cocktails and it'll come out.
It'll all be good. Hey, let me ask you, man, because, like, the babies, right? Like Lola and Bella, and they were so young when we were around, like back in those Phoenix years. Do they know? Like, I find my kids, like, they don't know dad as a competitor. They just know dad. Do your kids,
right.
You know, do they have any idea of what you were able to accomplish and who you were as a player? Like, do they ever ask you about it? Or Mateo, is he curious? Mm-hmm. Or?
Yeah. No. they know, because people stop you on the street all the time, and so they, and then you go to like the Suns Ring of Honor, or you know what I mean, they hear about the Hall of Fame thing, but like I never stopped to talk to them about it, and so we've never had that conversation, and they've never asked, but they know, just because people stop you on the street and people at school, you know, mention things or whatever, or you know what I mean, like socially they're used to it, but they don't know like more than that.
Right.
Yeah. I mean, it must, I don't know. Your boys have got to be coming because they play.
He's got some good ballers, I mean, too. Yeah.
Really good.
No, right. Yeah. No, but I understand what you said. They live in the world of basketball a little bit more because they're in the gyms, right, and stuff like that.
My daughters still think I was good. I'm waiting for that moment when they realize how they can Google stats. They're like, no. Oh, he wasn't any good.
No. That never has to change. Just tell them the advanced analytics era, what your stats nowadays would mean a lot. You'd be rich.
That's right.
By the way, congrats on the new little one. I can hear him in the background.
Yeah, apologies for that. But he's like, I think as soon as I start talking to someone else, he's like, you know, what the f-? Can I get some attention over here? So now he's chatterboxed, but thank you. I appreciate it. We're lucky. He's an amazing little guy, happy and healthy. So we're thrilled.
The Charity Shield event and tournament in New York City this weekend. What's going on with that?
Yeah. So my foundation's had, it's no secret now that I love soccer and grew up playing soccer, but we've had this charity soccer game. Rogers played in a couple times with NBA players and international soccer stars. And we added another event, a Charity Shield, which is like a five-a-side tournament. So like 100 people can sign up. You guys ever heard of like a Calcutta format?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like, I don't know if this is a true Calcutta format, but they rank everybody an A, B, C, D, or E player. And then they give every team an A, B, C, D, and E. So to try to create some parity. And then tonight, at the Gem Pub, we're going to have like an auction. So donors can come and buy a team. If your team wins, you know, you kind of like double your money. so to speak. So it's a little bit of fun. You know, it's cool. We got a few pros coming to play and just people basically coming, hanging out, having a tournament, some food, some beers, and then doing it for a good cause. So we're just, I mean, Roger knows me. Anytime we can put soccer, beer, good cause in the same sentence, it's a win.
It's so a win, 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 bro.
All right, so we've gotten to know our guy Raja here for about 6 months. We've been working with him, doing the podcast. We need some dirt, like, because he's a great dude. We're having some fun. I don't know if you know this, Steve, but he actually got kicked out of a high school basketball game for arguing with the officials. He had to take an anger management course to get back on the court. Like, so we know about...
Ask me if I'm shocked.
Not one bit is my guess. What's your favorite Raja Bell story?
God, I should have thought of some dirt, you know, like this is a perfect time.
Oh, this is great.
Throw him under the bus, yep. Just bury him. You know, the truth is I can't off the top of my head, you know, one of my best friends in my career, we had a blast. Our families hung out. I was there for the birth of, I think, both boys.
Yeah, well, both of them. Yep.
They were born in Phoenix. I mean, to see Dia on, and I'm taking it aside. Car here, but to see Dion and the boys on Instagram, like the skills they have in basketball is like amazing to me. You know, to think I was there, they're born, you know what I mean? These little tiny things. And now like it's crazy. So, I mean, I miss the Bell family. I miss all the times we had on the bus, the plane, in practice, you know, when it gets chippy and everyone's barking at each other and all those days, you know, they'll always look back and think about how much fun we had. And so, you know, like, I mean, as you know, like, there's nothing like at the end of your career to look back and think about the people that you got to travel around the country with and compete with, and to have people like Raja, you know, it was like, here goes the little guy crying. Perfect.
Yeah,
we're cracking up here.
Did you guys ever scrap? Like, in practice, did you ever get
out? No, he wants to be on Bell and Canal.
Yeah, like, that's right. Welcome, Luca.
He's okay. I'm smart enough to know that I don't really have a chance against Rara, so I never really I tried to stay on his good side. But I mean, I think we had a lot of competitive practices. We were usually on the same team, but man, it was just so much fun. And I always got a kick out of, I love competing myself, but I love the edge that Roger played with. And, you know, like clothesline and Kobe, I mean, absolutely ridiculous at the same time. As a teammate, beautiful. You know what I mean? Like, it was just like, you know, like you're in this deep, you know, rivalry, playoff battle. And, you know, when he did it, I was like, I couldn't believe it because of what moment it was. And at the same time, I was like, absolutely saw that coming. You know what I mean? I was like, so like to have a teammate like that and who was always up for, you know, the physical stuff and to compete and to put his mark on a game or a series was something that was so valuable to our team and something that I personally, you know, really appreciated because, you know, like at the end of the day, we're not all like that. You have teams that might have a lot of skill or athleticism, but to have guys in your lineup that will stand up for your team or take a stand, that does mean something. I mean, you don't necessarily always need it to end the way, you know, the clothesline ended, but at the same time, it does, I think, give your team an edge and give your team an ability to win certain battles that aren't even physical, just mental battles. So, but I mean, I'm kind of straying here.
Enough about
like
me.
Some
bro.
Of the funnest years of my career.
enough about me. Let's talk about you. Come on.
A lot of compliments for Roger right now. I kind of feel soft.
I appreciate the locking of the lips. Like these guys come on
and
they think they're gonna
so
like.
I so badly
what
wanted
the,
some dirt,
like,
but
what do
it's
you
okay.
Think this
I
is?
Appreciate it.
So point guard position, Steve. Way different than probably, you know, how you were taught to play the position. You know, I'm working with high school kids now and. You know, trying to teach the game from a place, you know, a pure place where we put stock in the things that we think are important. But the game is changing and the point guard position specifically is being played completely different. Like, what do you think your game would have looked like had you been bred in like today's climate of point guard play? Like, would you still be a pass first guy? Would you have taken it upon yourself to shoot the ball more? Like, where do you think your game would fit in with today's PGs?
Yeah, I mean, and I'm not, I don't mean this to pat myself on the back. I just mean this on a, like what would it kind of look like? I think it would have been a little bit more towards the way Steph plays. You know, just like more aggressive to shoot the ball. Like, I think if I made a mistake in my career that I didn't shoot enough, but, and I'm interested to hear how you approach it with young PGs, but you're right. It's changed. And we know now that if you're, you know, a 40% 3-point shooter and 50% field goal guy, you know, you should be jacking that thing. So like, it's, you know, that it's just better for your team and for the numbers analytically to shoot. Having said that, you know, there is something to be said for being a leader and, you know, being a playmaker, making your teammates feel, you know, a part of things as much as giving them easy opportunities. So I still believe that, you know, I would have been who I was. I would have definitely, you know, I just like to see other people succeed. You know, I don't know why or where that comes from, but forever since I was a little kid in hockey, soccer, whatever sport it was, I always liked to pass and liked to see my teammates do well. And right. That would have persisted, I think, but I definitely would have shot the ball more. The game has changed for sure. I think it's rightfully changed. There's probably a balance in there, but it depends on your personality. If your personality is to be aggressive and score, there's nothing wrong with having a, you know, 5'10", 6'4" guy that's your lead guard. You know, try to get downhill or try to get free and shoot and put pressure on the defense.
Yeah. Hey, so Mike and Chris Paul, right? Like, cause Chris is one of those point guards that I think is kind of a tweener in terms of generationally. Like I think he's scoring the ball a bit more, but I think his true heart is serving others too and getting off the ball. And then, you know, he's had his postseason like failures as has Mike. And I'm watching that Houston team and I know you've got an affiliation there to Golden State, but I think Houston's a real threat. So like, what do you see with Mike? Talk to me about, I've made my case for why I loved Mike and his style on the pod before, but can you talk to us a little bit about Mike, what you saw and what you loved about him in Phoenix and then the way you've seen, you know, him grow since then?
Yeah, I mean, I think Mike's a brilliant basketball coach. You know, we weren't a great defensive team. I think he took a bad rap for that, but we didn't have great defensive players. I mean, you were a good defensive player. I played hard. I think people look back and like, oh, I didn't even try or I wasn't a good defender. And it kind of takes on a life of its own. I played hard. I just wasn't a strength for me.
Right.
I was probably exhausted from the burden of the other end. And two, I just wasn't strong enough or physical enough to really, you know, make people feel me at that end of the court. And then you had Amari that wasn't a great defensive player. And we also played in an era where rim protectors were so valued. And so we went without a rim protector and tried to play fast. And so it was like, I thought Mike made decisions that were best for our team, but they weren't traditional decisions. So the media found that it was, I think, an easy narrative in a sense. So I think Mike's brilliant. I think he struggles sometimes being confrontational with his players. And I think that he's found, you know, Mike knew defense. I think Mike just was like, this group is not necessarily, no matter how much time we spend on it, doesn't have the pieces to be great defensively. So I think he departed from really trying to beat us over the head with that. And maybe that was a mistake, maybe not. But I think overall, he made an unbelievable basketball team that had a chance to win. We were very unlucky. We were also a little bit ahead of our time. And, you know, we played in an era where we weren't all the way in. We weren't hoisting tons of threes by today's standards. But we also were playing against teams that, you know, had Tim Duncan at the rim, or the Lakers had whoever it was, Gasol, right. Bynum, Odom, you know, like we're talking about some really big teams in a game that was a lot slower.
A year that you and Raja and Mike were close to breaking through, 2007, how much did you sell the Robert Horry hip check? And is the ensuing sequence and suspensions the biggest what if of your career?
Yeah, I mean, there were some what ifs for sure. I mean, some of it's just comical now. I mean, to look back and to think, you know, the game's over, we beat the Spurs. We're going back home. Everything's looking good. And like this, whatever, less than, I don't know, seconds left. And Robert checks me into the scores table. You think back and you're like, what is going, like that never, ever happens. And not only does it happen, but Boris and Amari take like two steps towards me I know Boris wasn't trying to fight.
Right.
They were just seeing if I was okay. You know what I mean?
And he might've been going to check on Tony.
Yeah, exactly. Could have been over there asking him if he could have a, you know, fat bottle of red tonight or something. But he's
you know, like it's this, and then they get suspended. We go home. We're already a small team. We're missing like our two biggest guys. And, you know, we hang on and we were leading that game the whole way until the last minute and lose. And, you know, just, it's like anecdotally, it's just like one of those things that happen. Overall, though, I think we take responsibility. I look back at it and say, you know, I could have played better. I could have made a couple more plays. And, you know, I'm sure some of our teammates could feel the same way. And we didn't get it done. I mean, the reason we love sports is because one team wins and one team loses, you know. And I never personally won. And so I'm on that side of the ledger, and that's what makes sports great. We can't all win. I got to stomach that. I got to take that with me. And that's, it's tough to swallow sometimes. At the same time, it's like I know I gave it everything I had.
Yeah. Yeah, no, I agree, man. I never got one either. But, like, you can't take away the blood, sweat, tears, the memories, the experiences. Like, they're there. That's what – I mean, it's a journey, right? It's life.
So, Steve, we do this next part of the show. It's called Superlatives. We do this with every guest. This is where we like to have a little bit of fun, and we can run through these pretty quickly. So, first up, what year did you have your best hair?
Oh, my God. I mean, I don't know that I had a good year, to be honest. I felt bad. I look at the shape of my two boys' heads, and I just shake my head. I mean, these guys are in for a rough go at the barber. But I had some and multiple redos. I never really took them seriously. I should have. My best hair, I mean, maybe the mullet. I don't know. There was a time there that was pretty mullet-ish. I'd say it's unique. Right. Let's put it that way. It's unique.
All right. Let's see. Let me pick one. All right. Which teammate was the best high five receiver of your career?
Well, I maybe overdid it with the high five. So, best high five receiver. God, that's a good question. Kobe Bryant.
What's so funny? Okay. What's so funny? I got you. Hey, was it? Wait. All right. Look. Forget this. Probably. Was it true that Kobe would come out like? Did he get massages the whole time during shoot around? Like when you were there, was there any truth to like? He was so like in tune with his body that he had it down to us to like, this is what he did every morning. He got a massage during shoot around. He'd come out. He'd listen for a few minutes. Like, what was it like playing with him? All right. Scrap the question. That was a dumb question. What was it like playing with him? Seriously. Because like
it was.
Go ahead. Go.
What were you going to say? I want to hear what you're going
to
say.
I always kind of regret like I had a chance to go there late. Like it was for the minimum and I didn't want to play for the minimum at that point. But the point was I would have liked to have seen how he worked. And like what day-to-day life was like with Kobe?
Yeah, I mean, it's I'm not really sure what, like, how the rest of his career was, right? Later in your career, you spend so much time working on your body. He may have been in the training room getting massages during walkthroughs and shoot-arounds. But, you know, as I think Jay-Z said, there's levels to this shit. Yeah. So I you know,
yeah, 100. Yeah,
definitely did what he had to do. And, you know, I didn't see him work on the court as much as I would have expected, but he definitely, you know, was very thorough with his body and trying to, you know, be prepared to play. So, it's a weird one, right? Like you, to see someone at year, whatever it was, 16, 17, 18, is probably gonna be a lot different from seeing them at 1, yeah. 7, 14 even. So, but you know, he's such a demonstrative, personality. You know, he's like the alpha of alphas and that's what I saw.
Yep. No doubt. Last one, bro. Life dependent on it. Former teammate to win a game of horse. Who you taking?
Raja.
Yeah. Yeah. Right.
I think I'd have to go with Dirk.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I would say that thing's, that meets all SEC regulations. Yeah.
All right, bro. Look, we're not going to take any more of your time, man. I hear, you know, Luca's been more than accommodating. Dude, we appreciate you taking the time. Hope the event's great, this weekend. And, love to the family. Thanks for coming on, bro. We got to do it again soon sometime. Steve Nash.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it. Can I just say I miss my guy, Belly?
Yeah, buddy. Hey, but I didn't get it.
Come on. Can I get a West Coast trip out of you once a decade?
I owe you one. I owe you like five of them. Yeah, it's happening. This summer we're coming out. You got some spare beddies?
We need to come out.
You got some spare bedrooms?
You guys got to come to the crib. We build a house. We need all the bells.
Oh,
Cindy God. Greenman. Everybody, come to the house.
All right, bro.
Come to the house.
Done.
Chop it up. We'll barbecue.
Let's do it.
Do it.
All right, brother.
Okay. Thanks, everybody.
All right, Hannah, let's do some five-star Q&A.
Five-star Q&A.
Okay, this guy who has a terrible handle, 1, 2, 3, 4.
And a bunch of fives.
And a bunch of fives. He says, who do you three get mistaken for as athletes or entertainers? Hannah, do you ever get asked if you are Hope Hicks?
Yep. I've seen it.
Matthew McConaughey is nowhere near 6 feet.
Who you got, Danny?
Brad Pitt.
No doubt.
No, you know what's funny is I get a lot of people, it's the Danny Werfel. Because he played at Florida, because his first name's Danny, like it happens all the time, especially locally.
Yep.
You posted the motorcycle pic yesterday. Do you know what a lot of people responded to that?
Yeah, who was it? Daniel Tosh, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people said Daniel
really?
Tosh. I hadn't heard that one in a while. Woody Harrelson is another one.
Okay.
Was
really
kind of a, yeah, which I don't know if that's good because he's not very good.
I don't
good
know
looking,
what he looks like.
I get Jason Taylor all the time.
Yeah. We were playing golf one of the first times we met. The
so
cart
funny.
Lady was sitting there, thought you were Jason Taylor.
Yeah, wait, I'm way more handsome than Jason
in
Taylor.
South Florida.
Jason Taylor, I used to get Leandro Barbosa and Boris Diaw. Like when we played together, people just couldn't tell us apart. They really couldn't. I mean, Phoenix fans could, but no matter where we went, one of us was always mistaken for the other. So
if you got approached with a basketball card and they had one of their cards, what would you do?
Sign it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why if I've had people say, hey, Danny Werfel, I'm signing it.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That happened to me once at an airport and I signed it as this person.
Oh, there
that's
you go.
What I thought
as
I
Hope Hicks?
It wasn't Hope Hicks. Honestly, I thought this guy was on something that he thought I was this person. Like I was like,
who
are no
you?
Way.
Who are you supposed to be?
It was Minka Kelly, which is literally the best compliment ever. So I went with it.
I don't know. Hope Hicks ain't bad either.
I don't know. I don't want to. I don't want to look like Hope Hicks. Yeah, no. I don't know who I get. I don't get mistaken for anyone. Nobody knows who I am. All right. Jared Wards. He said, which four people would you all be if you were on the Jersey Shore this current season? Now, do y'all watch?
No.
So I think I'm the only one in here that watched. So I asked the office yesterday. Uh-huh. We came to the conclusion. Danny is the situation.
Yeah, the situation.
Who has turned around his life. He's in a little bit of legal troubles. Probably going to jail.
Wait, isn't he engaged? Who got engaged yesterday?
Oh, my gosh. How do you know this?
Someone got engaged yesterday.
I'm late on that news. Come Raja on. Is... Ronnie, when he was playing, a little aggressive, a little bit of a temper.
Right.
But
give
when he's
like
not playing... He is Pauly.
We're all screwed with this. Like, there's no way we're going to be like,
good
oh,
comp.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which girl
Hannah
is
a combination of Sammy and Snooki.
Okay.
A little
I don't
hybrid.
Know what this means.
It's a
people will get it.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I want to be Snooki, though. She's a mess. I want to get hit. That's the only episode I saw. All right. EDFSU at FSU. He says, I was interested to hear about where everyone... Wait, hold up. You're Vinny, by the way.
Yeah.
Knocking the door down.
Yeah, he's like, yeah, for sure.
Right?
He knows it.
Right.
Yep, he is.
There's a video somewhere of Debo trying to knock a door down, and he just falls flat on his ass. You can ask the office for that. It's passed around. All right. At FSU, he says, I was interested to hear about where everyone lived in college and who was your best and worst roommate. Also, what was your favorite place to eat back then? Really enjoy the podcast from an FSU alumni 2001.
Burt Reynolds Hall.
A word.
Yeah, that was the football dorm at the time. And my favorite place to eat was Hungry Howie's.
I specifically remember
writing a check for like $4.67 like to get the pizza.
To get us.
Yeah, absolutely. They had the best pie.
Where did I live? Man, Boston University. I lived in Shelton Hall. Then I lived on Bay State in a cool brownstone, like super cool. At FIU, I got kicked off campus. We lived in apartments, and then I got kicked off campus my senior year.
Wait, why?
For too many infractions with the RA, and I threw a bike through a window. It was on accident.
Yep. He's Ronnie.
It was on accident.
Accidentally throw a bike through a window?
We were messing around. We were reenacting the scene from Karate Kid. There had been some adult beverages imbibed. My man Gene and I were reenacting like the Daniel. I just want to go back to Reseda. I hate this place. And I took the bike and I threw it and it bounced off a couch. Like it was right in front of the window and just shattered the whole
Shut up.
And they kicked me off campus.
Oh, my.
So Ronnie, I live with my mommy and my daddy.
Ronnie actually did that on the last episode of Jersey Shore.
Oh, really? I lived off of Euclid at Syracuse. Nobody knows what that is.
Euclid. I know Euclid in Cleveland.
What about best and worst roommate?
Were you a sorority or no?
No. No. Hard pass in the sororities at Syracuse.
I had a roommate at Boston University, a little dude who only ate ramen. Like, and he had like 90 boxes of ramen under his thing. And so that, I forget his name, but he only ate ramen.
That sucks.
Solid questions today in the 5-star Q&A. That's a wrap for us. Hope everybody has a great weekend. Enjoy the rest of the draft, the NBA playoffs. We'll get back on Monday to wrap it all up. Make sure you follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Canel and Bell. And as always, go follow us, subscribe, download on iTunes, anywhere you can find podcasts. Have a good weekend.